Hello, one and all, and welcome to the Damage Report. I am John Arulo. Very excited today for our Friday show, especially because we're mixing it up today on Friday. Instead of Brett, who joined us earlier in the week on Wednesday, we're very lucky to be joined by Viviana Vigil. Viviana, welcome back to the show.
Hi, everyone. It's so good to be back on this very hot Friday. Happy Friday, everyone.
It is a hot Friday. I am still filming at home in my doing a shed show, and there's no AC in here or anything. So I sweated out the last episode. I'm a little bit worried about how glistening I might be by the end of this one. So stay tuned to find out about that. But excited for a rundown as well, because as we always do on Fridays, we're gonna be throwing away our garbage people of the week. Viviana, have you ever participated in a garbage people before?
Once or twice, yes. I'm very geared up about my garbage person.
You got a good one?
I think so.
Okay.
Or a bad one, right?
Well, good and bad. I'm gonna warn everyone. Mine is, so normally on garbage people, we go, it's a little bit humorous. No, my person's really, really bad. Like really bad, but there's a reason. So that's how we're gonna close out the 90 minutes. So definitely stay tuned for that. But throughout this show, we got a lot to talk about. We gotta give you a little bit more updated information about the confirmation of Ketanji Brown Jackson to the Supreme Court, some terrible breaking news out of Ukraine, as well as a little bit of good news too. You got some good news, you got some bad news, and a lot of ridiculous stuff going on. We're gonna get to dunk on Devin Nunes, so you know that's gonna be a lot of fun. But with all that said, the algorithm is terrible and notifications don't work. So if you're on a platform that has liking, feel free to do that, that'd be great. And with all that said, Viviana, you ready to do this thing?
I'm ready, go for it, John.
Okay, let's jump into this video. Now that video, of course, shows two things, two very different things. It shows people clapping for Ketanji Brown Jackson, who had just been voted to be confirmed to the Supreme Court, the first black woman ever in history to do that. At the same time, though, it reminds us of why it took until 2022 for that historic mark to finally be met. Because while they were clapping, others, the distinguished senators on the Republican side, were storming out in a huff. They were so angry, so frustrated by the fact that they weren't able to block Ketanji Brown Jackson from getting onto the court that they decided, we're not gonna take this. We're just gonna walk out, Viviana. And it is so pathetic, so petty. They already made a mockery of the process. They already smeared her in a million unfair conspiratorial ways. And that wasn't enough for them. They had to storm out like little kids.
Guess what? They didn't do it. You could try to smear, you could try to, it didn't work. She's in, guys, sorry. And you know what, I'm not surprised at their behavior. It's very common for, in this country, we've seen particularly white men in power or any, you know, white men in general be extremely difficult to black women in their own home, in their business, spit on the floor, do kinds of things just to intentionally say, I don't care about you. This was their way of doing that.
Yeah, exactly. It's petty, it's pathetic. And we already know, by the way, we covered earlier in the week, polls showing that people don't like this. All the ridiculous, bombastic claims, though people were not a fan. Like sure, some of the most deplorable people in the country love it because they see someone like Ketanji Brown Jackson and they know everything they need to know at first glance. But most people don't like this. But I wanna be clear though, when I say that it's petty, I don't just mean that some walked out like you saw there, because those people that walked out, they at least showed up. Some were even pettier than that. And so I'm gonna turn to John Harwood, who pointed this out on Twitter. Lindsey Graham didn't wear a tie for the occasion of Ketanji Brown Jackson's confirmation to become the first black woman. That meant he wasn't even allowed in the Senate floor and voted no from the cloakroom. And then if that isn't bad enough, Harwood points out, all the more remarkable for the fact that Graham was wearing a tie at a press conference earlier in the day. He took it off. And I don't know why, but in my mind, all I could do was zoom in on the last part. He took it off, he took it off, he took it off. Yeah. He was dressed in senatorial attire.
It goes right what I was saying. intentionally disrespecting her, making an effort to not tip his hat, so to speak, right?
He took off his hat.
This is something that has happened to Black people and Black women in particular in this country, and on a day that we should all be celebrating, and I know I was, women across the country should be celebrating that there's another woman on the Supreme Court. We need her. This is a very important day. And he did everything he could do to not wipe his shoes before he went in her house. Just disrespect. And he's a Southern guy, right?
Oh yeah. It's supposed to be high class. Right?
No, he knows how to disrespect somebody. He's been taught.
Exactly.
They teach you in the South how to be disrespectful too.
Yep, he knows how to dress for specific occasions. You wear like a seersucker suit during a certain month. No, he knows all that stuff. And he decided to be a sucker, actually, in this case. Leaning in out of the cloakroom to vote no, like you're Kyrsten Sinema. But anyway, Jen Psaki was asked about the fact that some of these petulant children stormed out. And here's what she had to say.
It tells us that Senator Rand Paul cast his vote from the GOP cloakroom. He was in casual clothes without a suit, jacket or tie, so unable to come onto the floor. The reports, I think, two other Republican senators may have done similar. Is that an appropriate way to vote on a historic occasion like this?
I will tell you, I'm not spending a lot of time, nor is the president, thinking about the dress code of Rand Paul today. We're thinking about the historic confirmation of an eminently qualified Black woman to serve on the Supreme Court. Not really worried about his khakis.
That's pretty funny. I think we can do both, though. It is historic and it is awesome. And it's also incredibly petty. By the way, people are saying in the chat, like, why do they have to wear ties? No, I'm all the way with you. I think that the dress code is pretty ridiculous.
It's not
but
the point. It's
he knows what the dress code is. Yeah. That's the point. He purposefully couldn't come in because of the dress code because he took it off. He sleeps in a tie. It takes special effort for him to not have one on. And that is of course.
I think there was a little bit of a Freudian slip right now when you said he took it off. I bet it is a clip-on.
No shade to people who have to use clip-ons. You know, it's been a long time since I've worn a tie. I don't even know if I for sure could
I couldn't do it. I could barely tie a bow. No, it really is just a matter of him making an effort. Rand Paul making an effort. Those who didn't applaud. All of that is just, you know, they're going to be in history doing that. So, that's your legacy. So, be proud of it.
Exactly. And look, we were lucky enough that the actual vote was confirmed during the last few minutes of TDR yesterday. So I got a little chance to talk about it. But what do you think about the fact that it did actually succeed? They weren't able to stop her. She's going to be on the court.
Yeah, no matter what you guys did and tried, you put so much pressure on her. And here she is standing strong. And we are so proud. We are so happy. This is going to be a big win for women in the nation. This is going to be a big win for people of color as well. Not that she votes any which way, but simply having another mind there on the court to be able to weigh on different cases is going to give us as a nation more justice, I really feel. And I'm really excited and I'm really happy that it was almost like in your face, you couldn't do it, you tried, you couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. They did it with Merrick Garland, but they couldn't do it with her. And so it's very exciting that she's there. I'm just really proud of the fact that we're able to get it done. And Jen Psaki, I mean, what's she supposed to say? You know what I mean? She kind of said it without saying it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The bringing up the khakis says everything that you need to say. Yeah. Like she's gonna throw a little shade at them. Like he's wearing one of them was apparently wearing like a golf shirt.
Yeah.
You're in the Senate. What are you wearing a golf? Like you're gonna tee off in the hallway? What is the? You had to bring that.
They're frat boys. We got to get frat boys out of Washington. I'm done with them. Get out. We don't need you. No.
Exactly.
In an interview with Mitch McConnell this morning in which Swan asked McConnell whether if the Republicans should take the Senate in the midterm elections and another vacancy should occur while this president is still in office, whether a Republican-controlled Senate would hold a hearing on another Biden nominee. He refused to answer that question. Do you have a response to that? What do you think it says about the health of our constitutional system?
Well, I think given it's a day where with bipartisan support, we have a new we are about to have a new member of the Supreme Court, a historic and eminently qualified member of the Supreme Court. And she did get three Republicans supporting her. That is a good sign and something we should take a moment to celebrate. Certainly, we don't anticipate or predict. I have no prediction of an additional opening, but we would certainly expect and call for all members of the Senate to operate as professionally as the president and our team did in this case, which is ensuring that there was advice and consent, that she met, that our nominee met with 97 senators. That's obviously a great number from the other party. That is how we would conduct ourselves, and we would expect the same in response.
And so, yes, as the reporter asked, Mitch McConnell, speaking with Jonathan Swan just yesterday, said he couldn't confirm or deny whether, if the Republicans take over, as it's expected that they will later on today in the Senate, that if the next day there was an opening and you had 4 years of, or 2 additional years of Biden at that point, he would confirm that there would ever be a hearing on literally any candidate, no matter how moderate, no matter how qualified, no matter how many of the Republicans had already voted for them. Viviana, he would not confirm that there would ever be nomination hearings in a Republican Senate with a Democratic president, which is honest at the very least.
Honest, but also, isn't that your job? Isn't that what you're supposed to do? Isn't that part of why you're there? So you're just gonna, what if you went into work and you're like, you know what, I'm not gonna do it. I can't confirm or deny that I'll do it. How long would you stay at that job? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is what the problem with politics is people think that they can just not do their job because they wanna weigh in and their pockets lying here or there or the other place. It's embarrassing. If you're gonna go up there and say it, I mean, we've seen them do it before. Am I surprised? No.
Mm-hmm. It's important that we make sure that people know that this is the least surprising thing ever. I mean, in a meta sense, it's so absurd, so unacceptable that I guess you could be surprised, at least briefly, but it's consistent with what Mitch McConnell has said before. I mean, this is what they did to Merrick Garland. He set up a very clear standard about, no, it's just that it's in the last year and the people should be able to weigh in.
It's which in the last BS. 4 years of the presidency.
It's in the last 100 years of human civilization. There's no time. The next species should be able to weigh in. The intelligent bunnies that will come after.
Look how fast they got Kavanaugh in there. Kavanaugh was slippery. He just slipped right in.
Exactly. And so 1 year wasn't enough time for Merrick Garland. 30 days was more than enough time for Amy Coney Barrett. And now 2 years. And the thing is, we all need to be prepared for this. I want everyone out there watching this to do whatever it is that you can to avoid the situation we're talking about, which I think the road for that goes through supporting great progressives in the primaries that are still ongoing. That gives us then progressive candidates in the general. It gives us the best chance possible of winning those races.
Yes.
But also, we have to endlessly pressure Biden and the Democrats to, I don't know, do something between now and November, because one of the reasons it seems so sure at this point that Mitch McConnell will be the majority leader again, or at least some right-wing ghoul will be, is we're looking at months and months of what's supposed to be the best news, that maybe come September 1st, they once again extend the student loan debt payment pause. Is that supposed to be the thing that gets everybody fired up to vote? Because I know what you're gonna have on the other side. You're gonna have a couple more months of insane transphobia, mobilizing them, anti-abortion fervor, all of that sort of stuff coming from the right. They're gonna be fired up to vote. What is going to get our side excited to come out there on November?
That's a job that I will share and give to ourselves as progressives, is that we need to talk to people around us and not let fatalism take over. Not let people get totally burned out by this whole process, recognizing how heavy that boot is on our neck.
Yeah,
it really is. And it gets overwhelming. So I can understand why people disengage and they want to give up. And that is the plan. That's what they're intending for you to do, to just be overwhelmed. So to share with our friends, our family, those that you can share with, you know, how important it is to make the small wins. Because those are the ones that win the war at the end of the day. We got to keep the faith. Theoretically, you know, I'm not a religious nut, but we got to be able to have faith in the fact that we can get those small wins. We've had a lot of progress over the years five steps back, two steps forward, but we got to keep moving forward. And I think that's the hard thing, is to stay strong. It's what Ketanji, is what she said, persevere. We got to persevere through this time. I mean, this is when we have to show our true colors as being for the people, because we can't give up.
Exactly. Look, and there's a lot of people who have, let's say, maybe shows that look kind of like this that are trying to seduce you over to basically a complete apathy. It may be cloaked by something else, but it is taking yourself willingly, taking yourself out of politics. And now it's all just you're the guys up in the seats heckling at politics. This thing that we're involved in, that is just a game to be criticized. It's not a thing to be a part of. It's just fun. It's just entertainment. But that works for the person leading that cult effectively. They'll do just fine.
And it's easy to seem smart when you're like that. And oh, it's all bull. It's all this. And you're, now you're a genius because everything's just fake, right?
Yeah.
So
you'll feel better. You won't be any better off. And so here's the thing. Let's acknowledge something. We're in a period right now that is in some ways similar to, I'll say, like the second term of Obama, where we had a couple of years where it was abundantly clear that he is not going to be the candidate he campaigned that he was going to be. And so now what are we supposed to do? We know that we're in a fight, but it's not a fight that feels great, like a fight to get Bernie elected, a fight to take Trump out of office. It doesn't feel as satisfying in some ways, but I don't want you to miss that those fights are coming. And what I want is for us to be in the best possible position when we get to them. And that involves not sitting it out right now, because sure, like helping Biden to stay in power doesn't feel satisfying to a leftist necessarily, but getting awesome progressives elected along the way certainly should be. When we're trying to get a progressive elected in 2024, don't you want more elected progressives? Don't you want Jessica Cisneros and Nina Turner out there able to go on MSNBC and talk up the values of progressives and all of that?
Yes.
We need as much support as possible, and this is when we get it. We do the difficult, dirty, unsatisfying fight right now during this horrible period to give us the best chance possible of success when the big battle comes. And you know, if you've been in this for a few years, how close we've come and how devastating it is when we lose. Now just think about finally getting over that hump. And this is the background work that we need to do to make sure that that happens.
And keep in mind that the people are tired. They need local leaders. They do believe in progressive ideals, and they have had a little taste of it with the pandemic relief and some of those little crumbs that they gave us. We see that it's possible. You have progressive leaders willing to take care of their communities. That's what we need to know, that the people are ready for that, and just got to keep, you're right on it, John. And I really hope that we can get through it, because this is going to be a very, very tough election cycle.
Yeah, and by the way, like we bring on some people who are running, for instance, in state legislatures, but even we don't do nearly enough of it, because you have an opportunity in these midterms not just to vote for senators and congresspeople and all that, but for your state reps, your state senators and all that. And you might think, well, come on, that's not like exciting or whatever. Do you realize how high stakes those elections are?
Huge.
What have we been doing for the past year talking about
down to school boards, John? School boards are one of the most contentious races. I mean, we talk about critical race theory in school. We talk about, you know, LGBTQI rights in school and education. It happens in that microcosm, right? And that's why it is so important to get involved locally. If you guys are passionate, run.
Yeah.
Support candidates that you are passionate about, and it grows exponentially. I mean, we have a future to think about, and it is tough. The climate crisis, we have, you know, education being attacked, we have books being banned. I mean, we have abortion being banned. We have a lot of stuff that we have to protect our children from. And, you know, I don't have children myself, but I, as a former social worker, I always claim like all children are my children. That's how I see it.
Yeah. And if somehow you've made it to this point, you don't think that it's particularly high stakes, the Republicans understand.
You're probably a one percenter at this point.
That's also true. But but you can't, you look at what's been happening in Texas and Idaho and Missouri and Florida and Tennessee and like all these states now, they get how powerful local government, state government is.
And they are using it. New Mexico just did. New Mexico has free college for everybody. And it's been like that for a while. And now it's like a real thing happening. I mean, that can be a reality across the nation.
Exactly. And by the way, the National Democratic leadership, they haven't gotten this for 15 years. Like we cannot trust them to put the resources and attention needed into this. Yeah. But thankfully, the resources needed are lower than at other levels. It is a force multiplier on what you can achieve if you get involved, and if you get involved in organizations that do prioritize these. So don't forget about that.
How many troops have you lost?
We have significant losses of troops, and it's a huge tragedy for us.
Okay, so that is Dmitry Peskov, a top spokesman for Vladimir Putin, admitting there in an interview with a reporter for Sky News that Russia has lost a lot of troops, thousands of them. But what you might not see going around is a section that unfortunately is so scattered and disparate that we can't show you the video, but the reporter there starts to go through a particular interaction between armored vehicles on the Russian side and a Ukrainian civilian live in that conversation with Dmitry Peskov. We're gonna show you a screenshot right now of what it looked like. They use surveillance footage and geolocation and satellite imagery to show you the path of a Ukrainian woman riding a bicycle going down a road. Then they identify those armored vehicles. They show the armored vehicles shooting. They show a plume of debris at the last known spot of the Ukrainian woman. And then they show the actual video footage of people touring the devastation, the massacre there, and showing the woman dead at her bicycle. And Dmitry Peskov says, "I'm sorry, I'm gonna need you to be more specific. How do you know that those are our ATVs? How do you know that they fired, even though we're watching the footage live?" So they have been denying the massacres, denying the intentional murder of civilians. And even when a frame by frame breakdown of the murder of an innocent woman is pushed into their face, of course, Viviana, they still have to pretend that they had nothing to do with it. And he says, "We deny that Russian military could have something in common with these atrocities and with the bodies shown in Bucha," even though it's being mapped out, indisputable, undeniable proof.
It's horrific, John. It's horrific. And we've seen these tactics used before by other countries and by Russia themselves. And so it's not surprising, although it never gets easier to digest. It's horrible to see, horrible to think about. My heart really goes to everybody that is suffering, that is attached. I mean, people who have family there who don't even know if they're gonna see their family again, if they're gonna be alive tomorrow, the children. I mean, it's been just incessant, and the lies don't stop. Oh, we're pulling back our troops. Oh, we're not doing anything. Oh, well then who is this? What is going on then? Really? We're supposed to believe this? I mean, the gaslighting is unbelievable.
Yeah, and unfortunately there have been way too many people. Like, look, the fact that a spokesman for Vladimir Putin is, you know, running cover for them, lying, talking about false flags and all that, that's not gonna surprise anyone. But there were a lot of people in the wake of Bucha who weren't content to just say, "Hey, let's give it a little bit of time. Let's make sure that enough independent journalists have had time to look into this, because, you know, there's misinformation on all sides and battles." No, they weren't satisfied with that. It was, "This looks really bad for Russia, so I don't believe that could possibly be true." And look, it's been days now. We know even more about what happened in Bucha, not just the intentional killing of civilians, but the executions, like they were, their hands tied behind their backs, killed in the hundreds. And now we're finding out that there are other cities that the Russians have been pushed out of where there were worse massacres than in Bucha. That was unfortunately just a disgusting, horrific taste of what's apparently being done. And in that interview, and I couldn't stop watching Peskov being questioned there, he talked about the Russian forces moving out of places like near Kyiv and saying, like, this is a good faith measure. This is us engaging with diplomacy, as he denies the intentional continued murder of civilians. He wants the reporter for Sky News and by proxy, the audience, to give them credit for being humanitarians.
Well, we know that the Russian government doesn't allow you to speak the truth and will control the information that you disseminate. So I don't know what sort of knife is at the back of Peskov, but if he has any conscience at all, he's not sleeping at night. That's for sure.
Yeah, 100%. Well, unfortunately, as bad as that is, we also have to talk about the breaking news. Devastating breaking news out of Ukraine this morning, that a missile strike at a crowded train station in the east of Ukraine killed at least 50 people and wounded nearly 100 others. So we're going to show you a spot there so that you can see the city that it happened in. It is in the Far East, close to some of the most like years-long contested areas. And I need you to understand that as devastating as the numbers already are, this is the immediate aftermath of this attack. There are many people who are in critical condition being raced to hospitals. Some have already died in hospitals. That number should be considered tragically a low count at this point. God only knows where it's going to go. But we do have a little bit of information about what happened. This wasn't just a random strike. It was a strike seemingly specifically targeting people, civilians, who were fleeing the area. Mass accumulations of civilians, easy pickings if that's who you want to kill. So there were platforms at the station that have been jammed for literally days with people trying to get to safer areas in Ukraine, relatively safer, of course, because the strikes happened there too. So there's people in the east trying to flee to the west. And officials said there were about 4,000 people at the railway station at the time of the strike. So they have been waiting hours, sometimes days, hoping to get onto one of these trains. And photos of the aftermath show people, just bodies splayed on the ground, surrounded by scattered luggage and debris. There's a video with a woman screaming, there are so many corpses, there are children, there are just children. And Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, responded to this most recent intentional targeting of civilians, saying they have not abandoned their methods, lacking the strength and courage to fight with us on the battlefield. They are cynically destroying the civilian population. He says this is an evil that has no limits. And of course, the Russian Defense Ministry denied any involvement, calling the accusations a provocation and insinuating that Kyiv was responsible. So this, like every other instance where civilians have died, was just another false flag. Oh, it's all false flags, Viviana. I'm not even convinced that there are any Russians in Ukraine. I think the whole thing was just cooked up by Zelensky. That's what they would have you believe.
And we have to be very critical of what we see on social media and what videos and news is being put out, because a lot of misinformation with kernels of truth is being put out. And as progressives, we really hate to see African people being treated poorly in the Ukraine and all this sort of racism that's been highlighted recently. While it is an issue, the spotlight on it is coming from the Russian government.
Yeah.
Those stories, while they may exist, and I'm sure do, because we know racism plagues the planet, are being highlighted to change your view of the Ukrainian people while they're being murdered. Mm-hmm. It's exactly. Intentional. So we have to always have our wits about us when we're absorbing news and when we're reading things. And we have to remember images that we just saw. We have to know what the truth is and separate out all of those false flags. They're trying to gaslight to a point, and we've seen it work. It's how Trump got in office, is how the insurrection happened. I mean, the gaslighting works. That's how you got all those guys in khakis walking around with torches.
Yeah.
It gets in people's heads. And I've heard incel types talking about Ukrainians being dirty, talking about this or that. This is the ugly stuff coming from the extreme right now. Who would have told you you were a commie 30, 40 years ago?
Yeah.
So it is happening in real time, right? We have to really look at this kind of stuff and call it out for what it is. It's lies, it's gaslighting, it's crimes against humanity.
Yeah, no, exactly. And you're right, we have to be very extremely vigilant, constantly vigilant against misinformation, especially because sometimes like the stuff that's being put in front of our faces is so difficult to accept that it could be real. And I'm gonna give you an example. So this is from, I think I got this from the Washington Post. There was a missile in Kramatorsk, so that's where this missile strike happened. So this one was found close to the railway station. And it has in Russian the words "for the children" on it. So it seems impossible to think that, how could that not be made up? Because how could you be so callous that you would do that on a missile that was intended to kill innocent civilians, women and children. Now, there's been many things like this, and I haven't seen any where it turns out that, no, yeah, it was just Zelensky actually.
We've done it. The US has done it, John. We did it during Vietnam.
Yeah.
We did it during bombing Japan, naming nuclear weapons Fat Boy. I mean,
that's true. Yeah.
Disgusting behavior that happens in that military mind where they've been brainwashed to think that that's okay.
Yeah. It's just,
no, is it real?
Unthinkable.
Absolutely. It's unthinkable, and we don't belong to those sort of worlds where they brainwash you for so much, and I don't even know what those soldiers have to go through, but somehow they think that that's okay. And exactly. It's not surprising. It's horrible. It's just disgusting. Yeah.
How many troops have you lost?
We have significant losses of troops, and it's a huge tragedy for us.
Well, let's turn now to some other updates on what's going on in Ukraine. In the clip, you see Dmitry Peskov, the spokesperson for Putin, admitting, finally, from him at least, that Russia's experiencing massive losses. What's interesting is that that's where he draws the line. It's not a signal that the invasion was a terrible idea or that it should end. When he was asked by the reporter at Sky News whether Russia is experiencing humiliation considering the loss of troops and generals and equipment and all that, Peskov pushed back saying, no, it's a wrong understanding of what's going on. Okay. So they're losing way more soldiers than they thought they would, but this isn't a sign that this shouldn't have happened or anything. Well, take a look at this interesting update. This is according to the Daily Beast. Russian forces that unsuccessfully tried to take Kyiv were so confident that they would win, they brought along outfits to hold a parade in the capital, but they wound up dumping their fancy parade attire when they were forced to retreat. We have this statement saying, for today, we can say that those plans were disrupted and this is a member of the military in Ukraine. And those plans were disrupted by the heroic efforts of Ukrainian armed forces and other defense units of Kyiv. He went on to warn, however, that the capital city still wasn't in the clear, as it's likely the enemy has not given up the goal of a second attack on Kyiv. There is such a threat. So think about the confidence you have to have that you not only think you're going to take it in just in a few days. And I get why they thought that. Most people did. I thought that they would in a few days. But that you take along marching attire so that you can then have a propaganda parade through the sacked capital of a country you invaded. That's amazing hubris there.
I'm torn into believing whether or not Putin thought they would in fact have success to that level, or if he marched them to their deaths and propagandized them to think that they would have success, knowing that they were going to suffer a lot of losses and will continue. He doesn't care about sending his own soldiers to their death. Mm-hmm. It doesn't faze him at all. That's their job.
Yeah. And whether on the planning side it was true, he definitely doesn't seem to care right now. And that's consistent with the military leadership of Russia for a long time, obviously. But yeah, they're leaving behind supplies, they're leaving behind vehicles. And now
what's going to happen is enough Ukrainians are going to leave that then they'll continue to bombard. They'll continue to bombard. And eventually it might take hold. Because people have to leave.
Well, we know millions already have. But in additional updates, Slovakia has now confirmed that they've transferred a Soviet era air defense system to Ukraine. This is an S-300 missile defense system, which, considering the ability of Russia to this point, not only to fly fairly freely over Ukraine, but also do missile strikes, and not just in the more neighboring part, the eastern part of Ukraine, but missile strikes in the far west of Ukraine as well. A system like this could be very helpful. There's reason to believe the US was involved in a little bit of the negotiations around this, but it had been expected. This is one of the things that Zelensky wanted. I mean, he wants jets, he wants a no-fly zone, but this is one way that you sort of establish that domestically at least. And in addition to this, the S-300, Ukraine has also apparently received tanks and infantry fighting vehicles from the Czech Republic. And God only knows what'll end up happening, but right now at least, even if it's just a morale booster, some of the Ukrainian military leadership are saying that this is going to be like some of the big battles in World War II. They are going to be accumulating thousands of tanks to provide basically like an iron wall to stop a renewed effort to come at Kyiv. So we don't know week to week how this is going to develop. It has been an obviously wild and at most times incredibly tragic ride from the very beginning. But they are receiving aid. There was additional US aid in the form of Javelin anti-armor systems just earlier this week. So they've held out longer than anyone thought they could, Viviana. And that's a little bit of good news amongst all the bad.
I wonder what's happening behind closed doors right now in regards to negotiations between the US and Russia. Because aid is one thing, but there's going to be a lot of dealing going on to try to just control this. And I don't know what sort of concessions we're going to have to make, but that's to be seen.
Yeah, well, okay. With that, we're going to move on to a quick little update on something. Let's jump into this video.
Last one on this. Now that the Texas governor is saying that he's going to start busing border crossers to Washington, D.C., when they get here, are you guys going to help them find a place to stay and something for them to do?
Well, I'm not aware of what authority the governor would be doing that under. I think it's pretty clear this is a publicity stunt. His own office admits that a migrant would need to voluntarily be transported, and then he can't compel them to, because, again, enforcement of our country's immigration laws lies with the federal government, not a state.
Washington, D.C.?
Well, listen, I don't know, but I know that the governor of Texas or any state does not have the legal authority to compel anyone to get on a bus.
So, look, that's obviously a good response from Jen Psaki in a question that was framed very pro Abbott. But if you haven't been following, you might not know, what is this about? What are you talking about? You're going to be loading migrants on buses, transporting them across the country, and just dropping them in D.C.? No, that is exactly what the governor of Texas is planning to do. In case you missed it, here is a little bit on that.
Of illegal immigrants who are being dropped off by the Biden administration. Texas is providing charter buses to send these illegal immigrants who have been dropped off by the Biden administration to Washington, D.C. We are sending them to the United States Capitol, where the Biden administration will be able to more immediately address the needs of the people that they are allowing to come across our border.
Okay, so that's the entire thing is absurd and racist. It makes a mockery of our politics. It treats human beings as literal pawns, effectively playing pieces in a game. This is as dehumanizing a proposed ridiculous policy as I think I've ever heard. But notice, Viviana, that even while he's doing this radical thing that, like, we couldn't have conceived of someone being heartless enough to do this 10 years ago, even he has to pretend that this is empathy. I'm doing this so they can get the help
they
need.
Getting them services.
Yeah, he is too scared to be honest about how heartless and cruel this policy is designed to be.
Oh, he does not care about these people. This is absolutely a publicity stunt. He's stuck in 1991 with that jargon of illegal immigrants. Let's get with the program, Abbott. You know, this is not something that's new. This is the jargon that these types of people have been using. Put them on a bus. Ship them out, ship them back, fly them back, go back to where you came from. This is a political theater of go back where you came from.
Yeah.
We're going to ship them up and put them right there. Okay. Keep it real, Texas.
There are people, like, and even the question, I don't know who asked the question. Maybe they're a good person, but so now that it's going to happen, are you going to give them housing, give them something to do? It's something to do. No. They're human.
No, but they're willing to give $10,000. How much is it? If you report somebody who's thinking about getting an abortion, they'll pay that money. That's no problem. But educate a child?
Money.
No, screw you.
Exactly.
Screw these you, are, but use these protection. Don't get pregnant.
Exactly. You know, they're not coming over here to be given a hobby. They're coming here to escape a situation that most Americans, thankfully, are at least lucky enough, considering all that we've dealt with, that they couldn't even imagine how difficult it is. The things that these people have experienced that led them to leave,
the things
they've experienced along the way.
The lie is that we cannot have the society that we have and share it with these people. That's the lie. Mm-hmm. The lie is that these people will make it so that us Americans that have it so good are not gonna have it so good anymore. That's the lie. The truth is we have been built on the backs of immigrants in this country. We ourselves are the fruits of their labor, and our country continues to thrive when we allow immigrants to live here legally and to work and build businesses. That is the truth.
Yeah.
Now, this nonsense that Abbott's doing, he's a joke. He's a complete 100%. Joke.
Unfortunately, right now the joke is on us. Get out there and vote in these primaries.
This is why the local stuff is real important.
It is. It is 100%. Okay, we got to go to our second break. When we come back, though, we want you to vote. Some want it to be a little bit harder. We're going to break that down after this.
Everyone is wanting to make it as easy as possible and kind of appeal to the lowest common denominator of the easiest way to get as many people registered as possible. I see it the exact opposite. I want to make it hard. I want it to be something that people have to choose and re-choose and have to prove that they're a citizen and all that. So I would love, and again, I know this is controversial. Some people like it, some people hate it, you know, but I think we should clean the slate completely and have people have to re-register, say, every 8 years or maybe even every 12 years, a privilege to vote, you know, and I want you to have to actually like have to work to sign up, not have it be that there's this auto enroll and every single person is getting a ballot and all that. I don't like any of that.
I also don't like any of that, whatever that was. Unfortunately, that's Rachel Hamm, who is not just some rando. She is a rando, but she's a rando who's running for Secretary of State here in California, actually, wants to be my Secretary of State. And if what she says about voter registration and all of that doesn't scare you enough, wait until you find out why she decided to run. She said she ran as a Republican because she claims Jesus appeared in her closet and told her to do so. Hamm said she began her campaign because she, quote, would rather be dead than live in a communist country. How about neither? Like, does it have to be one of the two?
Are but you anyway, mispronouncing Jesus? Was it her friend Jesus, like a guy she knows?
Maybe Jesus? There was a Jesus in the closet. I don't know. But yeah, she thinks it's because Jesus showed up and she doesn't want it to be easy to vote. But she also has some other thoughts about the voting process. Take a look at a little bit more of Rachel Hamm.
The education part of it is so important because we do want people who are actually looking into what they're voting on, the people that they're voting on, the legislation. You know, like they really need to be educated. And when we do the system that we're doing now, it causes people who are not educated on what's going on and not they don't even maybe care, you know, enough to look into it, and then they're voting on things.
Wasn't it Trump that once yelled that he loved the poorly educated? Yeah. No. She's got the, like, you are not smart enough. All of you watching this, you're a bunch of big dumb donkeys. You're not qualified to vote. You need to listen to the Jesus Closet woman. She's done the research on Jesus and closets and then integrated it as the best academia does. Viviana, what do you think? She could be your Secretary of State.
I don't know if I could say it better than you just did right now, John. That is hilarious. She's a ham, all right, for the camera. Mm-hmm. That's what she is. She's out there trying. Do you really think this lady? I want to make it hard. I want to make it tougher than the DMV.
Yep.
Really? This lady is off. And there are a lot of people out there that, I mean, this kind of, this kind of stuff. Shiitake mushrooms has happened before. They have even put limits on for education about having babies. You shouldn't be able to have babies unless you're educated. They tried to do this numerous times. It's against the Constitution, Rachel. Hold you want to get into politics? You want to be the Secretary of State? Why don't you first educate yourself and learn the laws? How about that? Then you can maybe start thinking of ideas for your constituents and about them and how uneducated they are because you haven't even read the Constitution. So come back to us once you read that, okay? If you can read, we don't know yet.
Yeah, it ain't even that long, honestly. Like if you can't read the Constitution, you're not getting through legislation anyway. So look, hopefully she's running as a Republican. She doesn't have a great chance of getting through. But
as
this
a Republican, I'm shocked.
Exactly.
As a Republican?
So there's not a great chance that she's going to end up being the Secretary of State. And thank God, because they've already done this in a number of different states, the things she would want to do. They don't want you to be able to vote. So just to give you an idea, in Texas voters in the March primary, we now know exactly what effect their most recent laws had. The votes of more than 24,000 Texans who tried to cast ballots by mail were thrown out. That is 12.4% of all of the mail-in ballots. We're just not counted. So if you try to participate, you try to have your voice be heard, I guess you weren't educated enough or something. So they threw it out. And that's as a result of Senate Bill 1. 1 in 8 of every mail-in, they love it. They don't mind it at all. Don't let it happen in more states. We got to fight back against it.
It's not going to happen here, John. It just can't. It's just that. This is unpopular. This is controversial. I only want people on my block, on the left side of the block, to vote. It's controversial. Some people love it. Some people hate it.
I think if you're not left, you're not educated. Personally, I think. I don't actually think that. Anyway, I want to end the hour with a little bit of fun. So let's jump into this video.
What is your reaction to Elon Musk taking a 9% stake in one of your competitors, certainly Twitter?
Well, you know, I think it's very interesting because, you know, the goal that President Trump has and what I have and our team here at True Social is to open the internet back up so that the American people can get their voice back. So it's clear that Twitter is kind of a ghost town. They desperately need Elon Musk to be there. So, you know, it's probably something that Elon wants to do. I think he probably believes in free speech like we do. But at the same time, you know, there's not very much activity over at Twitter right now, especially when you compare it to sites like ours, where we're just in our beginning stages as we continue to test and bring people on day by day. Our interactions are already beating Twitter. And so Elon's going to have a lot of work to do there.
Okay, they're already better. Our results show that was not the case, actually. They're not beating Twitter. And oh God, the projection is so good, you don't even understand yet. Because not only did he say that they're beating them, he said that Twitter is a ghost story, and you don't yet know how much of a reveal that was on the nervousness he has about his job. Why did he use the term it's a ghost town? That's so specific, because very recently on Business Insider, there was an article. I spent a week on Trump's new social media app, Truth Social. I felt like I was exploring a ghost town. That's by Rosie Bradbury. He's just revealing that he read the article and he knows that nobody's using his dumb service. Oh God.
What a way to promote a platform called Truth Social than with a lie.
Yeah. By a lie and being so fundamentally antisocial.
It's right on brand.
Exactly. Look, limited credit to Devin Nunes that he was able to pause in his continual running away from virtual cows to stop and do that interview. But that's the only credit that he gets. In terms of honesty, none. Daily active users are around 513,000, which sounds pretty good, right?
Half of those are tumbleweeds.
Well, that's true too, but Twitter's is 217 million. Also, the way, it had been Truth Social initially the number one download on Apple's US App Store. It's now 173. That's horrible and understandable because it still takes
weeks. Candy Crush is still beating it.
What's that? Candy Crush?
Candy Crush has still got him beat.
And a couple of spinoffs as well. Cut the Rope.
Farmville. I think Farmville might have a beat.
Throwbacks. Yes, exactly. Anyway, it's so embarrassing. And look, I get it. He's running scared. He knows that people don't want to use it. And by people, I don't just mean regular conservatives. Donald Trump doesn't want to use it. The Trump boys had to be paid to use it. Nobody's actually using it. Because it's a ghost town. They want to be where the people are, like Ariel. And that is, unfortunately, for better or worse, that's places like Twitter at this point. You can keep trying, but that doesn't mean it's going to be a success.
Yeah, Trump won't use anything that isn't the best. And sorry, it's not going to be the best for you.
Yeah, and it's self-defeating because whether Trump showed up or like Fox News doesn't have an account on it. Like how pathetic is that? And even if they fixed all these problems, it would never be as big as Twitter, but it could be bigger than it is. Isn't that enough? I mean, Trump isn't the president anymore. Isn't that enough, Trump? Just give it a try, buddy. You're making Devin Nunes look even more ridiculous than usual.
Nunes anyway, and Peskov, you need to get together and just cry into their tea or something because they're being forced to say lies.
Exactly. That is unfortunately all the time we have for first hour. Thank you for those in the podcast and linear platforms. If you're on Twitch or YouTube with the members app, we got a lot more. So don't go anywhere. Viv and I will be back in just a few. Okay, let's see. Richard O says, I pitch and moan a lot about your show, but doesn't stop it being the strongest progressive show available. Keep up the great work, John. Thank
you. What are his complaints?
Look, there are certainly things to complain about the show. You don't know how much I love that. Like, obviously, I love, you know, people who heart and soul love everything that we do. That's great too. But if you really like it, but you can also identify the things that need to be better about it, that's awesome. I love that combination. And thank you, Richard, for being with us.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.